fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, baby! They can't block Calais Campbell.
Cuts right to the five, Brown to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown!
You've got to be kidding me, Carson Palmer.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Well, you know it's going to be an eventful offseason when we can't even decide how to start Cardinals Underground 2017. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard. I'm just trying to pose a question, gentlemen, all right? It's just a question over here. Are we talking about Carson Palmer and his future or not? Because there was Bruce Arians on Flight Plan, his weekly TV show, in the very last edition when asked about the future, the immediate future. He began with an answer from Larry Fitzgerald and the quarterback, Carson Palmer. And I'm trying to figure out if he is in play. Kyle Odegaard, what says you?
Well, I don't think so. I think all the body language we've gotten from him, everything he said on the record, I mean, in press conferences, it's all pointed toward him coming back next year. He played well coming down the stretch. It seems like everything is moving in that direction. But when you bring that up, it's like we talk a lot about Fitz, and obviously he means so much to this team and to this franchise. And if he retires, it's this really big thing. But it also doesn't change the total complexion of the team. If Carson Palmer retires, you don't have a quarterback, and you're going from a team that expects to be a playoff team next year to wondering where you're at. Are you rebuilding? So that would be huge if Carson considers it. But like I said, I don't think he's going to. I think he's ready to come back and play next year.
You know, you go from makeover to extreme makeover if you're talking about the quarterback position. And, you know, with all due respect to the likes of Kevin Cobb and John Skelton and Ryan Lindley, you might be talking 52-card pickup at that point because it might result in someone like Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, maybe that's what Larry's waiting for.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's what – I mean, I would say this. If Carson retired, I think that makes Fitz's decision for him.
It's got to be a huge deal.
But I agree with Kyle. I don't think it's happening.
So when he says, I want to play next year, I expect to play next year, how definitive do you guys rate that? Pretty darn definitive?
To me, it is. Going with other stuff, I mean, putting it in perspective, when Carson Palmer tore his ACL, it was 2 days after he signed his new contract extension.
That's right.
He tears his ACL signs the extension on Friday, tears his ACL Sunday. Monday comes in for the press conference, the sad, very down press conference, obviously. So there was lots of emotion still going through his mind. And he comes out and at one point says something along the lines of, you know, I hope they still want me around here. He just signed a contract extension. He's not exactly super mobile quarterback, so it was about just rehabbing the ACL, and he's talking as if the Cardinals might get rid of him. I just think that's kind of how he operates. So when he says, I want to be back, I expect to be back, to me, I interpret that as just him being modest again, where he would say, yeah, I'm going to be back, but I'm not going to assume the Cardinals want him back. But they want him back for all the reasons you just said. You don't want the 52-card pickup. And again, he said in the past, and he said this season, even before they started playing well right at the end offensively, how much he still enjoyed the game, how much he still enjoyed getting out there and practicing and prepping. I mean, those are the things that drive a guy from the game. That's what's going to drive Fitz from the game, and that sounds kind of harsh, drive him from the game, but what's going to make him want to retire isn't that he doesn't enjoy playing the games. It's training camp, which he called a grind. It's practice. It's going out there on a daily basis. It's what pushed Kurt Warner essentially out when it was all said and done. Yeah, he got hit many times, but it was he just mentally didn't want to do it anymore. I don't get that sense from Carson Palmer that he mentally doesn't want to do it anymore. That's why I feel fairly confident he will be back.
If you go back to Larry's last media session, we were all standing right there in front of his locker before the Rams game and his weekly media session, and we were peppering him with questions, and at one point he talked about his ability to have a chance to lead the NFL in receptions. How can you walk away from that? And I said, well, you know, you can still compete, obviously. You know that. And he said, well, that's not my decision.
Right.
He knows he can compete physically. And to your point, I took that as mentally, do I want to give it my all? Am I all in? Am I going to be there every single day in the offseason through training camp and all the above? So with that in mind, we're not talking about quarterbacks in the offseason, Kyle, or you beg to differ?
I think it's going to be a big discussion in the offseason, knowing if Carson is going to be around next year. He probably will, but at some point you're looking at quarterback of the future, because whether Carson's done or whether he's got one or two more years left, the time is coming where you need to have a quarterback for the next stage. And you have a defense that has a lot of good young players, and you've got David Johnson, who's one of the star running backs in the league. So you've got these young pieces where you're thinking about this transition. So it's kind of an interesting time for the Cardinals, where they still feel like they're competitive with these older guys, but they also want to be ready for the future, to where you don't have a 2 or 3 year lull trying to find that guy. And when you're drafting at number 13, it's such an opportunity to figure out who the best 2 or 3 quarterbacks are, really study them hard, and decide, if one falls to me, do I want to pull the trigger?
And you don't want to get ahead of yourself, because again, when you're drafting a quarterback, there's a lot of crapshoot to it these days in a lot of ways. Even Deshaun Watson, who looked so great in the second half in the national title game, you're talking about a guy who rarely, if ever, is under center. It's that same problem that, you know, he likes to run, but you want mobile quarterbacks, you need mobile quarterbacks. But as we're seeing with like Cam Newton, here's a guy who's built to be that way, maybe much better than most guys, including a Watson, for instance. But Ron Rivera is talking about having to adjust the offense, because let's face it, you can't have him get hit all these times. And this is what Bruce Arians has said. But this is the time, we are now in a time where we have seen with Dallas, for instance, and don't get me wrong, Dallas's offensive line is at this point much better than the Cardinals, but if you have a good running back, David Johnson, and you can put together a pretty good offensive line, and you have a pretty good defense, you can win with a young quarterback. So again, maybe your window doesn't close if you get the right guy. It's getting the right guy.
Well, Steve Keim sat in that very chair in this very studio last offseason. Could have been the offseason before, and that sort of makes my point in that he said one thing that keeps him up at night is the quarterback of the future.
That was last offseason.
It was last offseason.
That was his go-to line last season, because he said the same thing to me in an interview.
Okay, so there you go. I mean, you know he's been thinking about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the Arizona Cardinals are picking 13th overall in the 2017 draft. I don't think any of us would be surprised if they've identified that guy. But to your point about Deshaun Watson and the evaluation process, I asked Bertrand Berry, who did a segment a little while ago, and I just said, just tell me one thing, because B-Train watches a lot more college football than I do, and he's all in on Deshaun Watson. I said, I just want one answer to one question. Can he beat you from the pocket?
Right.
Because, you know, the way NFL defenses are, we know, even Russell Wilson still has to beat you from the pocket for all his escapability.
And I think that's the perfect guy when you look at mobile quarterbacks, where you have a Russell Wilson who can do it from the pocket, and who, if he gets pressured, he can get out. And a guy like Aaron Rodgers can do the same thing, where he's got a great arm, but if Aaron Rodgers needs to move, he can move. So I don't think we're at the point where RG3 or Kaepernick, Tyrod Taylor, those type of quarterbacks, I don't think Bruce Arians wants, where it's almost a run first thing. But if you have a guy that can escape, it just adds so much, where you can keep the play alive. And a guy like Watson, obviously they're going to look at, and will he even get to 13? Maybe not, but it's definitely an intriguing thing, where he wants a big armed quarterback who's accurate, which is the big question about Watson. But if you can have that mobility, it's a plus.
Well, and again, I think most quarterbacks these days, you're going to find mobility, because I think that's where the game is trending, and that's where most of the college guys are going to be most of the time.
Most of them.
I mean,
Sam Darnold, maybe not. Man,
maybe
if you
not.
Get the USC kid right now, I take him.
And that's very possible. But again, we'll see. He had a great year this year. Let's see if he can continue it for another couple years, or where he stands, or does he become another Matt Barkley, which, you know, at one point everybody's like, oh my God. And then what happens? You know, so we'll see where all that goes. At the same time, even getting a guy, there is a learning curve. I mean, Cam Newton won an MVP, made it to a Super Bowl, was the number one overall pick and deserved to be so, is prototypical in every way, and yet we talk about passing from the pocket. He not only had a learning curve there, there are still times when he has issues. And he does the escape thing like Russell Wilson, and they have planned run plays for him, but it's not like he's not Kaepernick. He's not running for run's sake. He's still learning that thing. And I think that's one of the things you look at when you're talking about the quarterback down the road.
That's why I think in a perfect world, if you can find one this year where you're drafting a lot higher than you have the last couple of years, the plan is to draft lower next year because you want to have a better season in 2017. And if you can find somebody, you know, you think Palmer's going to be around next year, and then you have a year, and Bruce Arians talks about he wants to get his guy to play and playing is the best way to get ready for the NFL. But if you have that year to learn under center, learn the offense, which is so complicated, I think that would help if they could find a guy this year.
Well, look at Carson himself. He didn't play his rookie year, right? I mean, nope. If memory serves, he didn't take a single regular season snap. So. John Kitna was the starter in Cincinnati. He attributed that to of great benefit to him in his career.
If you're willing to redshirt a tackle and a defensive tackle, I don't know why you wouldn't be willing to do it with a quarterback.
That's true. Where else do you think they have cited as a priority in the offseason if we're talking about position groups?
Well, I mean, for me, you got to look at wide receiver, and that's even if Larry Fitzgerald comes back. Now, if he doesn't come back, I mean, that may jump past quarterback in some ways. Again, depending on who is all there, I think you still need to take a quarterback in the draft. But let's just say, for argument's sake right now, Larry Fitzgerald comes back for one more season. You're still talking about the next two guys at wide receiver are John Brown, who, if you look at his numbers, they're nowhere near where they were. They're not horrible considering all things, but he's still got to get the sickle cell thing, and you don't know what his future holds. You got
BA said he lost his top gear and he has not regained it.
No. You got JJ Nelson, who essentially took over for what John Brown did a year before. But again, you may or may not have Fitz. You definitely don't have Floyd. You can't have John Brown and JJ Nelson being interchangeable. You would need both of them. I just think wide receiver.
Jerron Brown, okay, but are you counting on him?
No.
You know, too.
And again, you're talking about, even if Fitz comes back, you're probably only talking about one more year. So somewhere in here, you're going to need to get somebody. And if Larry retires, I mean, you're talking about not knowing who your number one guy is for certain for the first time since Anquan Boldin had 217 yards in his first game, and he became your number one immediately. That's 2003. That's a long time to know who your number one or 1A when those two guys were playing together. You knew those guys coming out of the box were your guys for a long time, and now all of a sudden you're back to that spot.
It was interesting that Bruce Arians said in his end of the year press conference, that's pretty high to draft a receiver at 13.
Yes.
And that might be a smokescreen. It might be smokescreen season already. He might be telling the truth, because in the past, he's usually taken guys in the third round or later and found success getting John Brown and J.J. Nelson and T.Y. Hilton and Antonio Brown and all these guys that he was there when they drafted him. So I think he feels like he's confident in identifying later round guys. And if you can get a guy in the third round, I mean, that's a perfect scenario for it. But if you think there's a star there at 13, receivers are so valuable that it also makes sense to, if they feel like, hey, we've got a number one, let's grab him.
And you might be in a position, if Larry hangs it up too, where you go looking on the free agent market.
Yeah, because you'll have $11 million free dollars if Larry Fitzgerald retires from
the
cap. So
I do want to say that you will have $11 million free dollars in terms of him retiring, but there is still carryover for him.
Yeah, four and a half dead no matter what.
But if a kid like Mike Williams out of Clemson, for example, you know, if he's all that, like everybody speculates, and he's somewhere between, you know, A.J. Green and Julio Jones, and he's at 13, you nab him. And you can count on him for the next 8 to 10 years. I absolutely would grab him. That's not too high for that sort of receiver.
Sure. If you're a Julio Jones, A.J. Green hybrid, I'd probably grab him at number one.
Just some of the stuff I saw on Twitter when guys are watching him and what they're comparing him to, and the upside
as
a former basketball player.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, to do it against that defense,
right?
You know, I mean, that's a pretty good barometer right there. To me, if it's not one of those two positions, and those would make complete sense, I'm looking at secondary, and obviously if you're going in the first round, you're going corner at number 13 overall. And there's just something about the Cardinals' defense when they have two reliable corners. Well, obviously you have the best cover corner in the game. I think we're all biased with Patrick Peterson. And then if you can get that other guy, it just, the system the Cardinals have run dating back to Todd Bowles and James Betcher, and to not have to worry about that and then dial up the other nine guys, especially with the uncertainty at safety, you know, you look at that going into the offseason. If they could somehow eliminate that, and, you know, yes, Brandon Williams came on a little bit at the end. Yes, you had Marcus Cooper, and he's a Pro Bowl alternate. But come on, you know, if you really want to bank on that position long term, I would not be surprised if they go corner at number 13.
I wouldn't either, and it seems like a sweet spot in terms of a cornerback, assuming there's not a quarterback that you love right there. Now, again, if you have Mike Williams with some god-awesome draft number or a grade, and he's sitting there at 13. I don't know if I'm passing that up. But I agree with Kyle that I do think Bruce Arians feels strongly that they can find receivers later that he can work with. You know, look, Steve Keim in the past has been parts of draft choices where you take the receiver high. Michael Floyd went actually 13th overall in 2012. Yep. That didn't quite work out the way they wanted. And I would dare say that as great as Larry Fitzgerald has been, I think if Steve Keim had been calling the shots back in 2004, that probably would have been a quarterback at number three and not Larry Fitzgerald. But it's happened before, and you could see what happened. But I see where you're going. And when you talk about the secondary and you talk about not just cornerback, but if you get a cornerback that can do some things, you can adjust, even though it's the safeties where you might be missing a lot of people, where DJ Swearinger is a free agent, you might lose him, and Tony Jefferson's a free agent, you might lose him, and you're not real sure where Tyrann Mathieu is health-wise. I mean, I think he's going to be fine going into next season, but, you know, you get one of those guys and you get him for cheap on a first-round pick that you're relatively cheap for 5 years, that really could set up your defense and your secondary for a long time.
Yeah, that was my point. For the sake of argument, if you find a lockdown cornerback and you're talking about Patrick Peterson on one side, rookie cornerback, whoever this is on the other, and Tyrann Mathieu in the slot, and then you have Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden, you've got five really good players at probably the five most important positions on defense. And if you do that, they're all young. You're obviously going to have to pay them, but that's a great defensive core to have. So cornerbacks, sure, if you like somebody and they're there, it makes a ton of sense to get one.
Well, and another axiom in the Steve Keim GM playbook is if you're going to be drafting that high, you're usually taking one of four positions: QB, left tackle, pass rusher, or cornerback, right?
Correct.
Those are the four positions that are really highly sought after. They're very difficult to come by.
Now, I will say this, you know, until I see a contract extension, and not the franchise tag, but a contract extension for Chandler Jones, I think you seriously look at pass rusher, because as of right now, there's a very real possibility that you franchise tag Chandler Jones, and maybe you start thinking that's only 1 year, because Marcus Golden, if he continues to play the way he's going, he's going to command a lot of money in a short period of time. He can't get it now. He, like David Johnson, can't get a new deal until after next season. But we're all going to talk about David Johnson and what he's owed probably at some point with an extension after next season, and assuming he continues to play the way he's playing. But you're going to run into the same problem with Marcus Golden. And if you can't get a deal done with Chandler Jones, do you really want to be in a position where Marcus Golden might need an extension and you have to do something with Chandler Jones after the next season and you do with both? Or is it better to have a pass rusher, a really good pass rusher, waiting in the wings as a third guy as a rookie, and then if you let Chandler Jones walk away after the 2017 season, and then it becomes Marcus Golden getting paid, and then you've got the cheaper first-round pick? That's another thing I think you would think about.
Which scenario is more likely, where you retain Calais Campbell, where Chandler Jones is tagged and Calais gets some sort of deal akin to a Michael Bennett? If you can make that happen and make that work, I don't know what his value is on the open market. Yeah. He's a little bit younger than Michael Bennett. Or do you get a long-term deal done with Chandler Jones and tag Calais? Which is more likely to retain Calais Campbell?
Because they
want him back.
Right.
There's no doubt about that.
And I think they do. I don't know how you think about it, Kyle, but I know for me, I think it's very unlikely at this point, and we've got a long way, but this is just my gut, it's unlikely that either Calais or Chandler is signed before free agency. And if that happens, Jones is getting the tag. And if that happens, then you're going to be in a tough spot. I mean, to me at this point, the only way you get Calais back probably is if Jones gets an extension done first, because I think he's the priority.
See, and I feel like if Chandler gets the extension, I'm wondering how tough it would be to fill out the rest of the roster if you also franchise Calais. It's hard to...
But I don't think he's saying franchise. Calais is not getting the franchise tag.
Isn't that what you're saying?
No, that's what I was saying.
Oh, okay, my bad.
I'm saying if you get a deal done with Chandler, you franchise tag Calais. Now,
I don't think
you can do what you did
that
the last time, because remember they tagged him the first time, then eventually worked out a deal before the season, you know, got done. The 5 years, $50 million, I think is what it was.
Right.
You know, you could do... But I think there's a real chance that he gets tagged, believe it or not.
See, I think
his cap number would not be that much more than it was this year.
Right, and I think that's too high.
Jones will go up.
And I think if you want Calais back, you want that number to come down quite a bit. And if you sign Chandler Jones to a long term and you franchise Calais, that's just a lot of money between those two guys when you've already have a lot of big contracts otherwise. So I think the more likely scenario would you work out a long term with Calais where you can push some of that money back, where he's cheaper in year one, where you can kind of fit him in. But if you only do a one-year deal, I think that would be too big of a cap hit in 2017.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I just think if that happened, I think you're really hamstringing yourself in terms of, because this all would have to happen before free agency even starts. And you might have to go into free agency and not be able to do much.
Let me ask you this. Maybe, you know, just like you went at it this year thinking this is the end of my window, what if 2017 truly is the end of your window, the last year for Carson, the last year for Larry? They're mm-hmm. back. And you go, you know what? We're going to tag Calais, and here we go. We're rolling the dice one more time.
And that I guess that's possible. I think it's much more likely than it was. But again, I don't know if they're going to be able to get anything done with Jones. And then if you're making a choice between Campbell and Jones,
I'm guessing they are at loggerheads between the Cardinals and Team Chandler Jones, just based on the fact that Bruce Arians threw out twice, we're going to tag him. He's talking to his agent.
My feeling is at this point, you're probably at loggerheads with everybody of note.
Probably.
I mean, otherwise there would be talk of deals getting done, but I don't think there's anything close with Calais. I do agree. I think they want him back. I don't think they're necessarily close with Chandler. I don't think they're necessarily close with Tony Jefferson. And again,
and they want Tony back. According to Tony, he went on air and said it. They want him back.
I think they do want him back. But again, they've got numbers what they're willing to pay and how they want to have this all work. And you know, those guys, look, whether they're supposed to or not, those guys all know pretty much where their market value is.
Here's my sleeper in this whole scenario: inside linebacker. You watch that national championship game, and you see what number 10 for Clemson running around. You see some of those Alabama inside linebackers. I would not be surprised if that guy is there, a Patrick Willis type, dare I say. I mean, I'm not going to go as far as a Luke Kuechly because he is so exceptional. But if you can get that guy and get that position answered with a free agency pending on Kevin Minter, I wouldn't be surprised if he pulled the trigger on that.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is you have to believe that he is this game-changing force, a Luke Kuechly or a Patrick Willis. Because if you get an inside linebacker and he's good but not great, you talk about the position values where you want a left tackle or a quarterback or, you know, the elite positions, an edge rusher, and inside linebacker isn't one anymore. So he would have to be a really, really, really good player if you want to take him at number 13, a guy that you think you can just plug in. He can be a Pro Bowl player for 5 years. Then, yeah, you probably do it. But at 13, you have to really love him. And if they do grab one, it's a sign that, hey, we think this guy's going to be a star quickly and that he can really lock it down. But if you have a guy like that and a Buchanan, you assume it's going to be another rangy guy. We saw that with Darrell Washington and Carlos Dansby, how good you can be when you have two great inside linebackers. I could see that.
And I would just like to point out, while I don't disagree with the thought process, you just named two great inside linebackers, Darrell Washington and Carlos Dansby, both second-round picks. And I mm-hmm. think that's what would make me hesitate if – I mean – you're assuming all the other good players are off the board, and we talked about quarterback, we talked about a possible edge rusher, we talked about wide receiver, and we talked about quarterback, obviously. I find it hard to believe you wouldn't be able to get somebody you really love at 13 at one of those positions that would trump that mm-hmm. wouldn't trump an inside linebacker, knowing again that you can usually find somebody. Now, you got to be able to find that guy. I mean, they took Kevin Minter in the second round, and while I think Kevin Minter has been solid, he's not Carlos Dansby, he's not Darrell Washington. And those two guys, by the way, Carlos Dansby was the first pick of the second round. Darrell Washington was very near the top of the second round, and both those guys, some mocked to the first round the years they came out. So we're not talking about, you know, they came out of nowhere. They just happened to fall to where the Cardinals were. But the
fact that other teams value those other four positions does push inside linebackers down.
Absolutely. And everybody's going to value those positions you talked about, those high – because that's how the game is these days, and you'd be foolish not to. It's just like people are talking about the quarterbacks. It's not a very strong quarterback class. That seems to be the general consensus right now, is you wonder if this is a weaker class compared to the guys coming out next year. Now, it feels like the last couple of years that gets said every year. That was said last year.
And then they go 1-2 anyway.
And you want to know why? Because of the need. Yeah. And there's always going to be the need. We're going to say this right now. I have no idea what this team thinks of, for instance, Deshaun Watson. But if Deshaun Watson is on the board at 13 and this team doesn't take him, there is going to be a large segment of the fan base that, you know, wants to throw up their nachos on draft day because why didn't you take him? Doesn't matter. They may not know jack squat except that you just passed on a quarterback. And sometimes that works out. And sometimes, I mean, you go back to Bruce Arians was asked directly about Derek Carr when they took Dayone Buchanan. And Bruce Arians said in the press conference after, I felt bad because everybody kept connecting Derek Carr to us and we were never going to take him because they just didn't believe in him at that point. Now, I know right now that sounds not good. Obviously, they could use Derek Carr right now, but it is what it is. And that's when you go into the draft, that's part of the rolling of the dice of all of this.
You're hitching your wagon to a guy for the next 4 years, 5 years. And if you're wrong, it completely sets back the team, and you have to give him a chance. So
yeah, that's the
even
problem.
If he's not that good, you're giving him 3 years, and then if it's Blaine Gabbert or whoever, then you finally let him go. But it's not like a Robert Kimdichie, where if you don't think he's playing well, you just keep him on the bench and you kind of keep moving along. He's going to play, and then that's when you have to decide when do we let him go? Is he a bust? Is he just learning? So there's so many factors involved that you have to love the guy, and that's why if they do pass on a Deshaun Watson, they just didn't love him.
Hashtag Matt Leinart.
Yeah.
Went number 10 overall in this franchise. So, but the only thing we know for sure is that there will be different kickers next year, at least competition. BA said it in his Monday press conference. He said it pretty strongly right after the game in LA in our postgame radio. We're going to assess the kicking game. I took that as translation for there will be blood. And already we saw the punter come out of the CFL.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's going to be another kicker in camp at the very least to compete with Chandler Catanzaro, correct?
I would agree with that. And I think that's necessary.
That's the funny part is we go through all these positions and we talk about all this stuff, and then you think back to the season and just these crazy special teams
scab
plays
picker.
Just really, really torpedoed the entire season. So you obviously have to get that stuff figured out, and they're going to be paying a lot of attention to it because you've seen what can happen when it's not pinpoint on the special teams game and how much it can hurt you. So everybody just dismisses it until it blows up in your face, and now everybody kind of realizes, hey, we need really good players there.
And to me, it's rational. You don't overreact. Look at the state of the Rams right now. Look at the state of the 49ers right now. You know you can beat the Seahawks, so don't overreact.
Yes.
You know, don't unnecessarily blow up the entire team.
Agreed.
When it came down to the smaller things last year.
Right.
Very correctable things.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking forward, not back, you're never going to say, hey, we're probably going to have three high snaps and a couple kicks kick block next year. I mean, you don't expect it to happen. When it does, it's rough, but you never go into a season thinking these things are going to happen to you.
What I don't appreciate, I was late to this podcast because I had the wrong ID in the building. I actually had a wrong ID, and I'm standing there at the elevator wondering why my ID won't work, and I flipped it over. It was the incorrect ID card, and then Darren is actually remembering day by day on the calendar exactly how certain contract situations came down with Carson Palmer. So I don't really appreciate that sort of recollection here on Cardinals Underground on azcardinals.com.